several questions might have been asked as I was standing here. One of the other ones that stands out in my mind in light of the confessions, how did our church get into the position in history of, for example, my congregation has been cited that our constitution says that our constitution's out of order because we bypassed the district president in order to install pastors. And how is it then, when you talk about somebody being put on CRM status, why do we have to have that renewed every, was it 4 years or 5 years? Either one of you gentlemen who talked in the office of the pastor to explain that.
We have no canon lawyers up here.
But how did our church body end up with all that power being moved from the congregations to our district presidents or our synodical presidents?
I'll defer to Professor Marquardt if he thinks I'm wrong, but I think the Constitution is a very good Constitution. I'm talking about the synodical Constitution, not, and the bylaws for the most part are an attempt to be good Christian bylaws. There is a problem, at least in the minds of those of us who try to live by the Constitution and its bylaws. One bylaw, I don't remember the exact number of it, says that the Synod is not a supervisory organization, but advisory. However, the officers of the Synod are called our supervisors, especially those of us who are called by the Ecclesia, tota Ecclesia, the whole Synod in this respect. It's a difficult thing to live with. Your congregation most certainly cannot submit to this type of tyranny. I shouldn't have to, but I do, because I'm under the direct authority of an official. Interesting, official. We've just proven to everybody's satisfaction there's only one office. And the people who are called officials are over us in some sort of way, and we don't even know whether they have the office. The word official, interestingly, was used almost always in a derogatory sense by the 17th century dogmaticians. So even in those days, they struggled with this idea. But I think the Constitution itself, I'm not saying it's contradictory or ambivalent, but it does say these two different things which make it difficult for district presidents and people and pastors to know just what they're supposed to do and not to do by human authority.
Do you have a second question?
Thank you. I'd like to ask a question of anyone, but specifically, it goes to Dr. Donfried and also Dr. Weinrich. If a good share of the ELCA were to come to the conclusion that women pastors are wrong, including some of the women pastors themselves, is there anything in history where the church did an about-face on women pastors, where they perhaps had them functioning sometime and then the bishops began to turn things around? And what would you see as a possible scenario for a situation like that?
Taking your second one first, in terms of the historical question, and I would certainly defer to my good friend Bill Weinrich here, I think it would be fair to say that the position of Jesus toward women, particularly, for example, in Luke's Gospel, and the position of Paul, for example, in Galatians 3, 27 and 28, talking about baptism, that in Christ there is not male or female, given that cultural Jewish context, as well as the Greco-Roman context, is very radically pro-women. There's a radical breakthrough there. And I think it is fair to say that as the church then develops toward the end of the first and the early second century, particularly in its conflict with Gnosticism, and that's where I would place the pastorals, in a sense are throwing out the baby with the bathwater. As they are sharply criticizing Gnostic heresy, they are also throwing out the women leadership in those churches. We know the Gnostic churches had women leadership. So it does appear to be that there is a certain cultural restraint on the initial freedom that has happened. That is not directly related to issues of ordination per se, but I do think we see certain shifts. With regard to the first question about reversals, whatever they may be, and I think this is terribly important as we, at least I keep in mind our dialogue with Rome, one of the things that we Lutherans always insist on is that the freedom of the gospel is for us the boldness to say we may have been wrong. And that, I think, applies to a wide variety of things, that we have no infallible doctrine. What is indefectibly true is the truth of the gospel, and that what is created by human hands may well be changed. And I don't want to be understood as applying that or suggesting that only with regard to the issue, or even with regard to the issue of the ordination of women. I think it can apply to a wide variety of adiaphora.
I'm not quite so certain as Carl is that that particular historiography is correct. There was, in fact, especially in Asia Minor, very considerable freedom given to women, even to teach publicly, it would appear. There appears to be evidence that philosophical schools, the Epicureans, for example, had female philosophical teachers who apparently teach publicly. So I'm sure there weren't as many as there were males, but there does appear to have been there. Obviously, there were priestesses and so forth. So certainly in some areas, there was, I think, a cultural milieu that would have been quite receptive to this. And yet the church seems, in my mind, to have resisted this from the beginning. There were a few occasions throughout the history of the church in which there were flowerings of female ecclesiastical activities, and sometimes under the auspices of priests. I'll just give you one example. In the 6th century in Brittany, we know of 3 Brittany priests who were allowing women to consecrate and distribute the Lord's Supper. The Gallic bishops, however, in council, disciplined them. And with language that would seem to imply that was simply a novel thing to do and was against, and oftentimes here as usual, Paul's statements in Timothy and Corinthians are quoted. So there were occasions in which church discipline was applied in these kinds of matters, but I don't see any grand reversal at all in this particular issue. Anyway.
Thank you. Well, I think it's time to conclude this part of the confessional symposium. We thank our speakers very much and remind you of our chapel service now. Hope to see you next year.